You're listening to Lawyers Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
Welcome back to Community Connections, and I have with me the great honcho of, down there at Grant Hutchison and at Hutchison Legal. So it's great to have you along, Grant.
Yeah, deservedly humble, Grant Hutchison. But can I just take this pause and say happy Valentine's Day to you?
It's... We're not going there. Anyone who knows, the first interview I ever did with Grant was on a Valentine's Day, I think 5 years ago, and it didn't go well, so we're not going to touch that.
I enjoyed it. But yes, it did get a bit dark.
It's more funny to look back on it.
Yes.
Now, Grant, we had... a couple of questions, and since then we've even got two or three more questions.
So
I'm hoping you're going to have to think on your feet.
Okay.
And it was about CCTV.
Yep.
Somebody's made the comment that they thought that the CCTVs had to just show your own property, that you couldn't be out in the street. Now, some guy who rang us said, well, he objects, but where he walks, there's one that is on the footpath. He knows that, and he doesn't think they should be allowed to do that. But secondly, somebody else said, well, you know, you get on the news when there's been something around that people, they often show on the news, people see CCTV. And so there's obviously quite a few that are out on the road or certainly not into the property. So they want to know about that. The other question was if they, if you've got CCTV, do you have to hand it over to the police? And I don't see why you wouldn't, to be very honest with you, but I'm not here to judge.
You're a little bit biased.
No, I'm here to just ask the question.
Because you're a law-abiding man.
Well, yeah, I can't see why you wouldn't, but do you have to? And if you didn't, would the police be able to get a court order and hand it over to you and make you hand it over?
Okay, well, that's a six-barrel gun.
Yeah.
And let me...
It'll keep off Valentine's.
Yeah, no, look, it's... and I was planning to talk about so many other nice, romantic things today, but let's get to cameras. It's so CCTV, so it's a closed-circuit television. It's... what are the legal rules around having or owning CCTV? Well, it's governed... This has got a multi-level of laws about it. So you've got the Privacy Act. Mm-hmm. Now, the Privacy Act doesn't apply to individuals, but only businesses. So, so, but still, a business using CCTV will need to abide by the Privacy Act, and so you might have privacy policies and then all sorts of things there. Then there's the local government bylaws, and that will depend, obviously, on where you live.
Yeah,
it doesn't appear that there's any references to CCTV in, for example, the Maroondah City Council. They don't have any bylaw. They don't seem to have any bylaws. In a quick search, doesn't show any, but they can easily. So you'd have to check your local circumstances there. But then there's also the Surveillance Devices Act. That's a Victorian piece of legislation, and that regulates the installation and use of CCTV cameras in Victoria. But then there's, in terms of visual recording, Section 7, you cannot record a private activity.
So would that include me?
It wouldn't include you walking along the street.
No, it wouldn't, would it?
No, that's not a private activity. If you're not a party, unless you obtain the express or implied consent of each party, you shouldn't do it. The penalty here is, in the event of a natural person, would be it's a levels, like there's a level of imprisonment and also a level of penalty units. And if you're a body corporate and you infringe, it's even higher. However, it doesn't include any activity outside a building or somewhere where a person would reasonably expect their activity would be observed. Now, you may object to this, but remember, it can come in really handy. So in terms of, let's address it as a public policy question. So there's a lady who's gone missing.
Yep.
What are the police calling for? Can everyone check their CCTV and other footage so we can plot where the person went? So obviously that leads into your next question, but before we get there, so if there's a private activity, it means an activity carried out in circumstances that might reasonably take in to indicate that the party parties to it desire it to be observed only by themselves. Now, this doesn't include activities carried on outside a building.
Right.
Or an activity carried on in circumstances where the parties to it ought reasonably to expect that it might be observed by someone else. I think if you poked your camera over the back fence into somebody else's yard, you're infringing their privacy.
Yep.
You're infringing, and certainly people would expect to be able to have freedom in their own house and in their own circumstances. The next issue is not just the visual recording, but also separately audio recording. If you're, are you recording what's said? So that can also be a separate offence. But then the question is, what about if you publish it? So if you start to put it on your website, now you would have seen in the Lehman defamation case, the fellow who decided he just decided to download what was on the federal court and decided he would share that, and so people could tune in and have a look at his. Apparently he says he didn't edit it, he just gave it whole stream. But there he was, and the court had already said, you're not allowed to do this.
Right.
You wouldn't ordinarily expect to be given access to this, and it was seen as an offence. And so the person was required to be in court on 9:30 a.m. And at 9:30, his name was called, and his solicitor had to get up and say, he's on his way from the airport. He'll be here in 15 minutes. And that did not impress the judge. It wasn't.
Fair enough.
I think he said, when you're coming from interstate and you know the time, you should come up the night before. But anyway, publication, visual or audio recording, you can't publish public private activities.
Like that.
Yeah.
Yep.
Unless consent is given, publication is in the public interest or for the protection of lawful interests of the person making it, or if the footage is being communicated or published as part of a legal proceeding. But don't try and do that with the federal court. Or the police communicate or publish it. So they've got... But the question is, do you have... does it have to be facing your own premises? Well, it can face other premises, but where they would reasonably expect their activities to be observed. Okay.
What about the police? What access can they have to the CCTV?
Good question. Well, before we get to that, if you're allowed to have it facing out, what stops you from peering into a person's house? If your camera appears into the room of somebody else's house, it's very likely that that would be considered private and so would breach the Surveillance Devices Act.
Yep.
Are there rules about where cameras can be placed? Again, it would not be allowed if that camera was recording something that's reasonably considered to be private. Can the police demand it? Now, that's your question. Can it be? So clearly, police are often asking for these things.
Yep.
And could they compel you to provide it? Yes, they could if they sought an order from the court. And there's probably there may be other rights that police have, but the first question is, police aren't going to put out a general for the whole town of Bendigo, Ballarat or Shepparton. We demand everyone's CCTV.
Yep.
They would like to hear from you, and then they might be able to get access to it. So there you go, in terms of story.
So could you refuse? I don't know why you would. I don't know why you'd refuse.
I've heard of people that would refuse, and they might feel that there's something which, well, you've got to ask yourself why, but I think the general... Sometimes you'll notice when you park in some of these giant car parks, they don't have TV, they don't have CCTV, because we've rung them up and said, look, there was an accident, we'd like to access your CCTV. When you're in the shopping centre, they've got it, but I don't know whether it's public... This was a few years ago, but I don't know if it's a public policy decision, but I don't think they want to get called incessantly to cases where somebody scratched another car. They just say, we don't have it. Don't have it.
We'll take a quick break. Back with more.
Should be making me 99.1.
You're listening to Lawyers Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
Now I'm talking to Grant Hutchison. Grant, doxing, I've never heard of the word. What's that?
Doxing, D-O-X-X-I-N-G. Doxing is, well, it's been around in the media recently because it happened to a certain community, but to dox someone is to search for and then publish private or identifying information about a particular individual on the internet, typically with malicious intent. So there was a WhatsApp group with the Jewish community, and somebody decided to then publish everybody's personal details. And it can be a bit intimidating that suddenly you've got your full name and address or, you know, details of where you live and suddenly, because quite often in these platforms there's a bit of anonymity. But it's when it's done with this malicious intention to try to cause damage to somebody's reputation or cause their business harm. So all of these things can occur.
But so they call that doxing.
Doxing. It's to search for and then to publish private or identifying information. But since we're talking about doxing, so stay away from doxing. Particularly on Valentine's Day, that's not a good thing to do. But I thought I'd also talk about social media and just, you know, how easy it is to just like something or put an emoji type of response.
Or a down.
And there can be real harm. There can be, well, think about it. If you get involved in that type of thing, it can be so instantaneous. But you can actually be sued for defamation.
Can you?
So remember, social media can involve...
Because very often, I just don't want to cut across you, but very often people will be at a restaurant, won't they?
Yep.
And take a photo of the dinner and then say, this is not what I expected.
This is rubbish, they might say.
So you could be sued.
Absolutely. Well, it's like anything else. You're publishing and these days you think you've got anonymity because you're doing it under some persona you put up there. Well, they can actually get behind that. They can find out who it is and then say, well, you've damaged my, you know, you've given it a one-star review. It's brought down my average. You're part of the problem. Now, it can be horrible if somebody, a competitor, decides
to... And someone did that, I think, didn't they? They reckon that it was a competitor.
Yeah, no, I think it can be a bit harsh, so when people come in. And I look, it's one of those things, but what about you just putting up an emoji or just a face that you think, well, sometimes people don't quite know what they're doing. Remember that case of, I hope it's not mythology, but I hope there's truth to it, where somebody believed LOL meant, rather than laugh out loud, it was something about lots of love. So when they saw somebody with a post about their father dying, they put LOL, thinking they meant lots of love. Thinking LOL. But really, everybody knows LOL means laugh out loud. Well, that's not... So you've got to know what you're doing when you enter that space. So it can be taken certain ways. So
if you just so let's just go back one step. We'll go back to the restaurant. You've got a meal.
Yeah.
So it's not what you want. So it's not as good as you thought. So, but you don't want to write anything. But if you put a sad face, you could still be defaming them, couldn't you?
It's a question of, have you, in the eyes of an ordinary person, affected the reputation of the plaintiff? So if you put up, if you took a photo, here's what's advertised as the hamburger,
yep,
and put that next to, and here's the hamburger I got, and it looks like something that came out of a frozen packet that's been, it looks pretty ordinary, then yes, that could be seen as you defaming. Of course, there can be truth that can be a defence to defamation, but you've got to be really careful about truth. You don't have to prove malice or other things. So I would, if in doubt, go without. Keep your opinions. There was a case where somebody who, in the case of Marburg, a doctor had to publicly apologise and pay $180,000 after he supported and allegedly edited a defamatory page that made a post regarding another doctor. And so he was... Anyway, be careful.
I think I remember reading that too. Two doctors had a bit of a biffo on in the...
Yep. You don't. But also, we had the first emoji defamation case reported in Australia, and that's the case of Burroughs, which held the court had authority to find defamatory content even where more indirect means of communication like emojis were used. The court found emojis in comments left on a post by a lawyer about a judge.
You'd have to be silly.
Anyway, now I'm sharing this because it comes in the Law Institute Journal, so a magazine. So, yeah, you don't want to really... You may have feelings about the judge, but keep them to Valentine's Day or yourself, yes.
All right, we'll take another quick break.
You
You're listening to Lawyers, Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
Now, Grant, you want to talk about a special disability trust?
Absolutely. So it's something covered in the Christmas newsletter that we, and some of them are in your foyer here, so people can pop in and find them. But a special disability trust, as the name suggests, is the benefits somebody who suffers from a disability.
Right.
So a special disability trust. You as parents might have a child who has special needs or a severe disability, I should say, and so you want to provide for them. And so often people say, well, if I provide, what happens? They're going to miss out on their pension, you know, all the things that the government's... No, there are special rules if you set up a special disability trust. So you can preserve the disability support pension entitlements and all of those things that are associated with the benefits that the person with the disability or the person with the severe disability has. But you can put in these trust assets, and there's concessional asset limit of $781,000. That's not as of July last year, so it's probably up to about almost $800,000 by now. And they're exempt from the usual assets test for pension entitlements. So also there in terms of how income is treated, but also when you give money, let's say you're on a pension yourself and each pension you want to put money in, then there are special rules around what money you can put in.
Oh,
so,
yep.
A combined amount of up to $500,000. I want to repeat now, this is, please seek your own independent legal advice. This is of a general nature only, etc. I know it's already there. But there's also rules, special rules about capital gains tax and income tax benefits. So special disability trusts are worthwhile. The other things that you might want to think about is if somebody doesn't have a disability but they're not able to look after themselves. And so there's also what's known as a protective trust. So where you're protecting somebody sometimes from themselves. You may find somebody has a need for special care, or you may be concerned that they're because of a drug, whether alcohol or an illicit drug, that they would just take their money and waste it. And so you can set up in your will a protective trust that protects the money.
So that stops them taking it out at a lump sum or something?
Yeah. So effectively, normally a protective trust may say that they get the income each year, but they don't get the capital amount. Or if they do get the capital, they only get a tenth of it. So it's spread over a while. So they can't buy as many drugs. No.
Well,
it's really trying to see... that they're provided for, and hopefully they don't use anything for the illicit purposes. But you're trying to protect them from themselves. Yeah, but sorry, Alan, you were going to say?
No, I'm listening to you.
Yeah, okay. Well, there are other types of trusts. There's family trusts, there's testamentary trusts, there's all sorts of trusts. But normally that has a tax aspect to it in terms of how it can impact. And trusts can be misused. I remember there was a tax avoider of some note many years ago who used to set up trusts, and he'd go through a phone book from some remote country and name all them as beneficiaries, and tax department would be, and he'd make them all entitled. But they'd never know about it. So there were all sorts of... Look, the tax office has caught up a bit about those things.
All right, so let me just ask you this though, Grant. What's the main reason for a trust? Is it a tax advantage or what?
Well, going back many years, it would be that there was an entitlement that, so you might want to provide for somebody in some way, and you're trusting somebody else to look after them. So you have the money, you're saying, I trust Grant to look after Joe Bloggs over there. So the trust arrangement is more where there's a person who puts money and entrusts it to somebody else to care for or use those monies for what's called a beneficiary. So that's really the idea of a trust in its really basic terms. But a trust can have huge tax implications. And I know a couple of elections ago there was talk of doing something in the trust arena, and certainly dealing with things differently. So Yes, trusts are a fascinating area of dealing with these things. But any other questions, Alan?
You caught me out there. I must be honest, I went outside and had a cough for some reason.
No, that's all right.
Can you set up a trust? Because there are family trusts too, aren't there?
Absolutely. So a family trust will provide for family members. So, you know, there may be a... And sometimes there was a thought that one generation makes the money, the next generation squanders it, and so if you want to build up wealth, occasionally you want to skip a generation.
Yep.
So there may be that person who just likes to take mum and dad's money and use it at the pokies. Protective trust may not be enough. You may want to actually say in the will, I'm setting up a trust that provides some income for this person, but really it's going to the next generation. But a family trust can provide often for spouse, children and grandchildren. It's those family trusts, and normally it can be a discretionary family trust, which gives discretion to the trustee to give certain as much as they think is appropriate, and they'll often look at who has an opportunity to take some tax-free income, and they'll then distribute more to those people than to others that would just be taxed at the top marginal rate. You poor thing, you need a cup of ollie. Yeah.
You were young.
Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
And welcome back, and we're talking to Grant. Grant, you want to talk about a sporting, or if a person is a director of a sporting club. We're going to tread carefully here.
Let's deal with a club. There's a concept called vicarious liability, Vicariously. What? Vicarious. I do want to spell it for you. V-I-C-A-R-I-O-U-S. Vicarious. Basically, you become liable for the acts of another person. So obviously, a place of work, an employer can be vicariously liable for the acts of an employee because the employee's done the wrong thing, but the business can become liable for that because they've done it in the name of the business.
Right.
It's a little bit difficult, or it's a little bit different, but the court found that a sporting club can be vicariously liable for a volunteer or others that hang around the club and did the wrong thing. And so the question is, to what extent does a club have responsibility or vicarious liability for those that are almost become part of the club?
Yep.
And what is that responsibility, and can the club be held liable? So the club in this case had a bit of money, and so the thought was that even though the perpetrator, the person who did the wrong thing, may not have any money and was the logical person to go after in the first instance, it also seemed logical and appropriate to go after the club, and that's what happened. And so
they were sued. Well, I liked it.
Oh yeah, it went to court. It was there's a case in last year, the Victorian Supreme Court. So it was put to the jury in a sexual abuse claim. So terrible circumstances.
So somebody in the organisation had sexually assaulted someone, and the organisation done nothing about it. Is that what you're saying, Grant?
Well,
or didn't do anything to stop it.
And these were young children, yep. So we need to tread carefully around this. But obviously, does a club have responsibility? And I think let's address it in the more global sense. And yes, you can't just turn a blind eye, particularly when somebody starts to have a bit of a reputation around the club. You can't just have this, I'll look down my nose at that person without doing anything. No, you've got to actually get in there and sort out what's going on. So things that occur in the club can ultimately be left at the foot of the club.
All right. We'll take this will be our last break, and we'll come back. We've got a big question for Grant to bring back next month, and we'll be back with more.
I don't want to be a tiger, cause tigers play too rough. I don't want to be a lion, cause lions ain't the kind you love enough. But as I want to be your teddy bear, put a chain around my neck and leave me anywhere. Oh, let me be, oh, let him be. Baby, let me be around you every night. Run your fingers through my hair and cuddle me real tight. Let me be, oh, let him be your teddy bear. I don't wanna be your tiger, cause tigers play too rough. I don't wanna be a lion, cause lions ain't the kind you love enough. Your teddy bear, put a chain around my neck and leave me anywhere. Oh, let me be, oh, let him be, oh, teddy bear. Oh, let me be, oh, let him be your teddy bear.
Listening to Lawyers, Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
And if you have any legal questions that haven't been answered today, you can send us an email to info@yarravalleyfm.org.au. That's info@yarravalleyfm.org.au. And we'd be only too happy to ask them next time when they're in. They come in the second Wednesday of every month, so they'll be back next month. Grant, we've had a couple of inquiries about incorporation. Now, we all know sporting groups. It doesn't have to be sporting groups, but a lot of just local community groups are incorporated. And the idea behind that is to try and protect the people on the committee so that they can't lose their houses and all this sort of stuff. But it's been put to us, and we'd like to have a look at the rules of incorporation, that may not be the case. If a committee acts unreasonably, then is it possible that they can go after that committee? And I'm talking about either running it into debt or doing something silly that's way outside of what could reasonably be expected to do. Then would those committee person be liable?
Okay, so great question, and I won't try to answer it now, but I do want to just take... I suppose it reminds me of what's happening in aged care at the moment. Often in aged care, they're trying to change...
Hey, don't look at me when you're talking about aged care.
No. I was before that, I was thinking about the how apt your songs are that you're playing Teddy Bears for Valentine's Day. You're very good, but we're not going to go there. Okay, so... but, yes, often a place... So they're going to make it so it's... not coming under the corporations law, but under human rights. So there's a certain change in terms of federal legislation, but they're certainly wanting to make the board of directors potentially liable big time.
And
so,
when you talk big time, are you talking jail time? Or
I don't think they're excluding that. I think there is an opportunity for jail, so we can all the board can all have matching uniforms.
True. So in what sort of instances would that happen?
Well, when a serious injury occurs, the difficulty here is that often the board is of a governance level that might meet once a month.
Yep.
And they're not really controlling day-to-day activities where the workers are involved, but all sorts of things can occur. And the question is, when you've got people who volunteer their time, whether it's the local doctor and other well-meaning people who serve on these boards, is the correct response to suddenly make them potentially liable big time? So you're talking about, I know you're talking about unincorporated associations.
No, incorporated.
Incorporated.
Yep.
Oh, well, there's, okay. So there's the Acts Incorporation Act that deals with certain things. Yep. Certainly if you're dealing with things as an unincorporated association, those things, everybody on the board or the committee can be held personally liable. But you're right, the Acts Incorporation Act in Victoria, I won't answer the question for next week, but there is some protection there. But... certainly, if you're on a normal company board, that's if the company incurs debts when there's no reasonable expectation that those debts would be paid as and when they fall due, then the directors can be made personally liable for those debts. And of course, the taxation office at the moment are bringing out what's called director penalty notices, which means that if you don't wind up the company or pay the debt promptly, then that can be a real problem. The worst problem is when somebody takes a director, sees this director penalty notice, puts money in of their own funds, and then the company goes into liquidation. That company, that may be a preference payment, and so it's recovered by the liquidator, and then the director's made liable the second time. There can be all sorts of... You just need to carefully navigate around these things. So
have you been reading the paper? Because I don't want to talk about something that...
What's that?
..is going to get what's going to get you into trouble. But I was reading a story over the weekend in the last day or so, where the directors of, I think, one of the NRL clubs are being asked to put in over $1 million each.
I'll deal with that with the quarter of a mil each when we come back on the other question. So RFL director, NFL.
NFL, I believe.
NFL director.
I believe one of the...
I don't know that... that's not my favourite sport.
No, but I was just...
But I'll look at it from a legal point of view.
I think, that's what we want, because I believe that... There was a story about one of the directors had to sell his house in Malvern, and that's up for sale because they've got a... But if one of those directors don't put in their one point, whatever it is, then the others have to make up that share as well.
Wow. Okay. There could have been a guarantee signed. There could have been all sorts of things that directors automatically become liable if they sign a guarantee. So, but let me look into it rather than speculate with you. But, yes, what else is happening in the legal world? Is there anything else you'd like to know about?
No, you tell me.
Well, I think it gets back to Valentine's Day.
Grant, we've got 4 minutes.
Can I just say, I arrived early because I got here early today and I walked along thinking I might grab myself a pie or something nice along Hillsborough Main Street. It's like a ghost town.
Yeah, there's no power.
The only place that's open is a nice, they've got the little art gallery going in the council spot there. It's Perry Whitefield, I think. It's so well worth it going in. Apparently you can pick up some seeds and sow some seeds yourself. And so it's a tremendous, but everything was, I thought, there's a lawyer's office up there. I'll go and have a look. And when the lawyer's closed, you know town's in trouble.
Well, actually, I called at a place this morning and to get a coffee. And when I saw the queue, it was enormous. And it was just as you come into Hillsville. So they were doing coffee. And the lady said, oh, there's a 15-minute wait. And I said, oh, no, I can't wait that long. So I went down the main street. And you're right, there's no power on. All the shops are shut.
Yeah, there's a gentle hum of generators.
Is there?
For those people that are still trying to operate a little bit. But, the other place that was open is the florist.
Yes.
You wouldn't want to miss that on a day like today, would you?
Well, I noticed on the side of the road they were too.
They don't need power for that. It's just cash.
So I presume on the way back you're going to buy a big bunch of flowers?
My Wendy has a view about... I used to always buy her a rose for every year that we'd been going out known each other, and or every year that she'd been my Valentine, and so it got more and more... and eventually she said to me, look, the quality of... It wasn't my fault, but apparently they store up their roses for Valentine's Day in a cool store, and she just said there are better quality roses other times. So you just don't know what you're getting, but normally, you know, within a few days, the initial petals come off and there's these brown petals, and it's just... Anyway.
So she didn't like it.
Well, she just said she's a very... clever woman when it comes to money, and she'd like to know that she's getting good quality roses and she's prepared to wait a week.
Yeah, but that's all right. But do you actually buy them in a week's time?
Will I buy them? She's got roses many times from me over the years, but I do miss giving her that symbolic one extra rose. But I think I've lost count of how many years. How many years have you been with your...
52.
52. You don't look that old.
I might. I was a baby. So how long? Well, you can't remember how long.
Well, it'd be... I know we've been married almost 40 years.
Oh, it's all right. And you'd known, obviously, for a while before that.
Yeah. But it wasn't that long. It was only... I was married at 21 or 22. It was...
True.
There you go.
It's a little while ago.
That's not in 20. No, but thinking back, we're up to about 38, 39 years. So, yep. But it'll be lots of fun. But that's one of the things to celebrate on a day like today.
Absolutely.
Have you bought roses?
No, but I've got to go past a few places on the way home.
Yeah, get good quality. give her an IOU.
Grant, look, it's great to have you in. I really enjoy our hour together, and we do impart quite a lot of knowledge to our listeners, and we do get quite a number of questions with people coming in with them, so it's terrific to have you in. And I hope it's a great year for you and everybody down at Hutchison Legal. Yes. And we look forward
absolutely.
To
it. And sorry, I should say, yes, everybody should go out and buy roses. I don't want the florist industry to think that we're not encouraging.
I was going to say, I'd be a bit worried if I was you.
I'll be speeding out. I'll travel carefully out of town.
I was going to say, there might be a dozen people out the side before you even get out the car park, mate.
Thanks, mate. Take care.
Thanks very much. Bye.